Questo episodio è interamente in inglese. È il secondo di una serie di conversazioni con Abdi Assadi, un terapeuta e maestro spirituale di cui più volte ho parlato negli episodi del mio podcast. In questo secondo episodio parliamo di come prendersi cura dei propri bisogni in una relazione. Parleremo di quali sono i bisogni che possiamo chiedere all'altra persona di soddisfare e quali no. Faremo distinzioni fra bisogni adulti e bisogni infantili. Spiegheremo come accorgerci di quando è uno piuttosto che l'altro tipo di bisogno che chiede di essere soddisfatto. Parleremo di codipendenze e molto altro. Puoi ascoltare il podcast di Abdi Assadi su Spotify e conoscerlo meglio attraverso il suo sito www.abdiassadi.com. Se vuoi ascoltare altre mie condivisioni e farmi domande, puoi unirti al canale Telegram Ian Ritter Evolution. Buon ascolto.
Brother Ian. So here we are in episode 2 of what's turning out to be a series of conversations between us.
Yeah.
And the topic today is how to get our needs met in relationship, which is a pretty broad topic.
Mm-hmm.
But that feels one of the things for me as a healer, and I'd love to hear your take on it. It's something that comes up a lot in relationships, intimate relationships.
Yes.
With one's partner, with one's lover, spouse, gay, straight, trans. It's just a human experience.
Yeah.
And I know my own experience as someone who's been in long-term relationships, it really is the most arduous yoga. It's the most difficult union, is how to get one's needs met in a relationship.
Yeah.
And in my experience, it's not something that's been modeled very well in our culture. There's a lot of literature on it. There's a lot of therapies on it. You know, Harville Hendricks, I remember coming across that, which was very profound teachings, getting the love you want, the love you need, getting the love you want. You know, with exercises that one does in terms of getting one's needs met. But in day-to-day life, it's actually quite difficult. So what is your experiences around that, both personal and with your patients?
The first thing that I noticed throughout the years was that needs was the primary driver for everybody all the time. We're constantly driven by needs, be it physical needs, be it spiritual needs, be it emotional needs, be it psychological needs. We're constantly driven by needs. And the more the relationship is intimate, the more the demand for those needs to be met. The more we seek those needs in that relationship. It's very interesting because we're constantly looking for our needs to be met. And I think it's a natural association because we started as children and our parents were the ones closest to us and were the ones we were relying on for our needs to be met. So I think it's very instinctive what comes up, especially in, I mean, obviously in relationship, as far as I'm concerned, the ones I've had all throughout my life, but also with patients and with couples that I work with occasionally. And it's really always there. Whatever skirmish, whatever discussion, whatever conflict is there, there is an underlying need that is not being met. And as we dive deeper into the topic, there is no clarity whether it's the other person that needs to fulfill that need or it should come from somewhere else.
Oh, so you said something really profound here. I think you put your finger on the hot topic there. Where is my responsibility? Where is my partner's responsibility? Where do we meet in the middle?
Right.
Let's just start in the beginning. You know, in my experience, so much of this stuff is unconscious. And when we say unconscious, everyone nods their head, yes, yes, yes. But it's called the unconscious because it actually the conscious mind is not privy to it, right? So many of these needs and given the childhood woundings that many of us, all of us really, but many of us have to different varying degrees, a lot of that stuff gets carried over. So carrying on from our topic last time about the adolescent ego and its functioning in the body-mind, that's a really profound thing.
Yeah.
And then the different ways that we have butted up against our childhood wounding and react to it. Yeah. So for some of, you know, when we say needs, what's very interesting, when I sort of put people to the test, when they say in a relationship, I don't, you know, she doesn't, he doesn't need my needs. I'm like, well, what are your needs? People actually don't know what their needs are. So the next thing is also like, what is actually our needs? There's wants. Wants are different than needs. Mm-hmm. But what are needs? Mm-hmm. We know something doesn't feel right in relationship. We become reactive. We become angry. We become withholding. Yeah. Same with our partner. But to really define what the needs are. And I feel like that's different from person to person. Mm-hmm. So we can delve into that a little bit. Like, what would you say for you when somebody says, hey, Ian, what are your needs? Are there words that come up? Is there behavioral stuff? What are they concrete? What are they?
Well, as we introduced the last time, I realized that I had to do a lot of work on needs. I mean, last time we talked about my clinical depression that was triggered by a relationship and a failed relationship. And I really had to sit down and say, okay, so what did I need here? What didn't I receive that triggered me so deeply that I lost myself? And one conclusion that I came to, that it's still a huge part of the model I work with today, is childhood needs, adult needs. Those two elements are there all the time, but we are not aware of which are which, and sometimes they're mixed. But learning what the distinction is between the two is key. And as you always point out, it's about looking in. It's about feeling. It's about acknowledging what the body is telling us. Because in any given moment, my body is either comfortable or uncomfortable. It's as simple as that. We're either comfortable or uncomfortable. And if we are comfortable, our needs are met, basically, you know. If we're uncomfortable, there's some need that is not being met. And that's the beginning of it all. And it's the beginning, whether I'm working with someone, you know, it's about, what are your needs? Fuck if I know. Mm. So how are you feeling? Why are you here? Why are you even here? Yeah, because this and that and that. Okay, okay. So it's layer by layer, and you keep going deeper and you keep going deeper until you get to that need, that underlying need that is creating all that discomfort. It's the wah of the child, of the baby, of the infant that is so instinctive to know that he has to cry out because his need is needs fulfillment. But as we construct our overlays, our mental overlays, our psychological overlays, we stop being instinctive on that level and saying, hey, there's a need here. I might not know exactly what the need is, but there's a discomfort that I need addressed.
So that inner paying attention, it's really, really important. I know in my own experience, again, you know, being an old goat now, but you know, in my younger years, I realized it took me, you know, because I've been in these long-term relationships, I realized that I could identify my need. I had no idea what my needs are, but I realized I could identify it where I'd be passive aggressive. Right. I would try to be a good boy and then punish.
Right.
Anger would come up. Withholding would come up.
Right.
And also what complicates this or adds a level of nuance is how we dealt with our unmet needs as a child. For example, you know, me and you, for example, we learned caretaking. You know, we weren't met in a certain way.
Yeah.
So we learned like, well, I have no needs when a child doesn't get, which of course every child does. But then we'll go into, as soon as there's some kind of cognizance, we'll go like, I'm going to have no needs. And then I'm going to meet your needs, meaning parent and then lover, friend.
Yes.
And then even gets more nuanced than that, because since we're so afraid to be vulnerable, then also I'm going to give everything, which is not healthy, right? It's a dishonest way of being in the world unconsciously. And then I don't even know how to receive, so I'm going to keep giving. And then all I do is we have speeds. We go into depression. We go into anger. We go into resentment.
Yeah.
So these layers, it's really important, especially for those of us a little bit older.
Yeah.
By the time you're in your 30s and 40s, you have enough of a history to look back and investigate. Be like, what are the things that happen? You know, what are these things that these partners have said to me or my friends? Right. It's so easy to love an animal because an animal is this undifferentiated love. Mm-hmm. Well, we can have our issues around it when animals quote unquote act out. But most of it with humans, it gets way more complicated. So the animal thing is a very powerful place to practice, but it's very different when it comes to humans. And the other thing I've noticed doing this work for 40 years, people, depending on whose energies are stronger, meaning their woundings are deeper, they will inform their relationship to be into that. For me, as a person who's very powerful, his defense mechanism powerfully became caretaking because his trauma was so deep, I would go on and turn into relationships into that. I will take care of you. I'll do the cooking. I'll do the shopping. I do that. Meanwhile, getting more and more angry and more and more anorexic internally.
Yes.
And then withhold, and then punish, and then be in anger. Does that make sense to you at all? Do you connect with any of that yourself?
It makes perfect sense. It makes perfect sense. And it really resonates with how the child had to survive the family environment and the relationship with the mother in our case. But it can be the father, or it can be, you know, whatever. It's really about, oh, I realize that my mother needs more attention. And the moment I give her attention, I will get that little bit of attention I need. It's never enough, but it's, you know, I'll make do. So absolutely, absolutely. And then it becomes a habit.
And it becomes a habit, deeply ingrained habits. You know, I don't want to get too into this, but it's important to drop this piece of it. This is something that took me years to realize. When our childhood wounding, when that initial assault and insult happens, the only thing that's available to the child, right, is the Eros principle. This is before sex becomes sex, but it's a pleasure principle.
Yeah.
So we attach the pleasure principle to the pain, right? So that's when we become a sadist or a masochist. So one of the things is our partners, our intimate partners as we get older, are always going to be in these types because the unconscious is trying to heal. Your conscious mind is not privy to that information. So if there's two potential lovers, identical twins, one has the wounding of original childhood, and one doesn't, we don't even recognize the latter. We recognize the childhood part. And this is a very interesting thing, because for people who are older or have been in several relationships, like, how am I choosing this same person? Well, the you speaking is not choosing it, is the unconscious mind.
Right.
And there's two parts to that. One is that part is sexualized. So we have a sexual, and it's not about sex, it's the Eros principle.
Yeah.
There's a charge of attraction to someone who has the same wounding that aggravated you, assaulted you as a child. But my sense of it always has been too, the unconscious is trying to repeat it to heal it. But since the conscious mind is not privy to that, we can do that for 50 years and not heal it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I would also say, as we go deeper into the topic, to pay attention to that, for people to kind of have some insight internally, be like, huh, what are the similarities?
Yeah.
Like, what are the things that kept coming up, right?
Yeah.
With the same person or a different person, what are the topics that come up? And it's always 50-50.
Yeah.
It's always, we got to look at their 50%, but we got to really look at our 50%, but like, what is this pattern?
Yeah.
And it's a very painful business. Painful business.
It is. And you know what really fucked us up?
Disney and
Hollywood.
Ooh.
Disney and Hollywood.
Get into that.
You know what the key word that really, really fucks us up is? Familiar.
Lovely.
We think that familiar means, oh, I found my soulmate. This is so familiar.
Yeah.
You know, it's like speaking to an old friend. It's amazing. And yet,
you know,
literally, it's familiar because that's how you related to the parent in question when you were in your family. It doesn't mean it's good for you.
It means
it hurts you in a familiar way.
Beautiful.
It's just, you know, the kind
Great
of
point.
Pain you're familiar with.
So one of the things I tell people, it's probably like 25 years now, kind of the dime drop for me 15 years into practice, I always tell people, and I haven't always taken my own advice. it took a while to learn it because, you know, you're always teaching.
Oh, fuck no. We never do that.
Well, because, you know, you're always, again, it's like amazing, right? As a healer, you're teaching what you need to learn. But I would tell people it has to feel different.
Yes.
Like if the person feels similar, not that don't do it, pay attention.
Right.
And
one
of the things in relationship is the second you have sex with someone, the unconscious is in full effect.
Yes.
Also with the people who have more wounding, some people don't have it as much as someone like me and you, let's say. I always say take your time. Or if you want to have sex, make it about sex, but don't be aware that now the blinders went on. Because again, that piece of it, the Eros principle, we sexually find attractive. The wounding. That's how we survived it. So, and then the part of familiar, you know, beautiful what you're saying about Hollywood. Literally all media, I really learned this at a young age in my 20s. all media is codependent. All music is codependent. I can't live without you. Yeah. Like, all movies are codependent. Everything is like, my power is outside of myself. You complete me. I miss you. You break my heart without you.
You make me feel like a natural woman.
Oh, you make me. So that part, right? It's literally like, I am taking my agency, putting it outside of myself. Now, one of the things that you're so dialed in with that I love, and you said last time, so much of this is run by the child ego, infant ego, and adolescent ego, which is the agency. It's like, you know, the child can't survive by itself, right? It's, again, as adults, we talk about this stuff. It's hard to appreciate. Yeah. It's literal survival.
Yeah.
If you have a checked out parent, especially the mother at a young age, literally what happens is you're going to die. It's not like, oh, she hurt my feelings.
Yeah.
That's like later on. It's like, I'm not going to get fed. I'm not going to get fed. I'm going to die.
Right.
So there's a desperation in this.
Yes.
And then the addiction and the chemical sort of things that happen in the body when we're with, the, as you say, the familiar, which is usually the unhealthy, it is profound business.
Yeah.
So this is also really great for people to examine when they're about to meet someone or go back if they're in a situation. Yeah. Like, what were the initial feelings? Right? It's more than just the honeymoon period. It's, as you said beautifully, familiar is that part of the unconscious.
Yes.
It repeats it. Yes. And it is yoga. It is like, if you are on a spiritual path, the relationship piece is the most difficult. Yeah. It really is. To get in a place where, not serenity, it's always difficult sharing life with someone else, especially when we're so hyper-individuated.
Yeah.
But that's our practice. And also we're so, you know, I don't see necessarily healthy models, the Hollywood thing, as you say, you know, old codependent and very juvenile. So we're starting with that groundwork for our conversation today.
Yeah.
The unconscious is running it.
Yep.
We're trying to meet childhood or infantile needs as an adult.
Yeah.
Would you agree that first and foremost, that falls on our shoulders of figuring out what our needs are and actually meeting the things that are supposed to be met by ourselves as a start?
Yes and no. And I'd like to go back to something you said previously that I found very interesting. The disappointment I felt at a certain point of not being able to rely on my instinct. I used to think my instinct was extremely reliable, was the most reliable part of myself, and finding out that it's actually not. Because instinct, the gut, is really concerned about survival.
Lovely.
So if we had to survive back then by pleasing the mother that otherwise we feared would not feed us, you know, our gut started telling us, okay, so you have to caretake her. Then we're going to get fed. Right. Yes. We got it. We figured it out. And then we started applying that all throughout our life. And we kept relying on the gut. We met someone. Wow, this feels, you know, the butterflies in my stomach. This feels right. Let's go with it. And then it would just be the same thing over and over again. And yeah, I mean, there's a great passage in your book in the Shadows on the Path where you say, you know, when you recognize that, just turn around and start running, because it's really, you recognize that, it means it's exactly the same thing that you've experienced a number of times already.
You made a great distinction in our last podcast about the difference between the mind, the gut, which people think is instinct, but there's the third piece, which is the knowingness.
Right.
You know, the Sufis call that the heart. It's not really.
Right.
Right. So that level is what we're talking about, to not to go into the head. The head goes like, oh my God, looks great on paper. The gut goes, it feels familiar. Those two things, not so good. And then there's a knowingness where, you know, when we look back, we know. Like, there's a knowingness that we know, you know, and the earth at large, the universe at large, always throws signals. There's these signals like, this is going to be a nightmare, man. This is not going to be a good thing. But, you know, we push that, and we can also even mask that as like, oh, it's divine intervention.
Right.
This is this.
Right.
You know what I mean?
It's meant to be, you know, we're soulmates. We've been together already and yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
Right. It's that thing.
It's amazing how,
And the mind and the gut are really good screamers. You know, it's like, let's go for it.
Yeah.
And and the heart, you know, it's quiet,
whoa.
It's peaceful. Yeah. Because the heart goes for do I feel safe with this? Mm-hmm. It's about safety. It's not about, yes, it's not about survival. Mm-hmm. It's about safety. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm okay. I can breathe. Well, yeah.
Yes, and the heart in these situations, just to be clear, there's always been a part of me in these relationships in the beginning. So this is also gets very nuanced. I really believe on a karmic level, for lack of a better word, just big relationships come because there's stuff to be learned. There's stuff to be there. So there's that level too, not right or wrong. I'm not trying to sell anyone anything. So there's a knowingness there, but also know, and I don't know where we want, what we want, language we want to use for this. Was it the heart? We'll just use it that, because it certainly wasn't the gut. Certainly wasn't the brain. There was a part that already knew, was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. This is not good. It's like being a drug addict. Like, you know, you really shouldn't be doing this drug, but you do it anyway. But it's the part that goes like, this is not good, man. You're numbing something. This is going to be painful. You got to get up tomorrow at like 6 and go to the hospital. Like really probably like doing coke right now. Not a good idea, right? And when you're 20 something year old. So there is a part too. So that part also is a nice muscle. So that part that you said that goes like, yeah, I want to be like that. That part also is just like, I don't know if this is healthy. And again, it's so many levels, right? Part is like the only way you can have the discussion me and you are having is to go through those relationships and be like, no, 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 no.
Right.
Some people have less wounding, so they can do it once. Some people don't have the level of wounding. Right. They're good from the beginning. Majority of us fall somewhere in the middle.
Right.
Right. So it'd be really good practice to kind of go in and just, not as a blaming thing, but take self-responsibility. But like, what is my part in this? Mm-mm. If I'm on a second or third relationship where these things keep coming up, okay, 50% for this home slice, this homeboy. What is my 50%? Where is that part of me that like, what is that? And not as a blaming thing. Mm-hmm. This has to be approached gingerly. Man, you got to have compassion. Yeah. You're not doing this stuff because you're an asshole. You're doing this stuff because you're not in the picture. The you that's doing this stuff. Who wants to be hurt or hurt another human being? Really, you got to be a psychopath. So not people that I work with or myself.
Sure, sure.
And there's a lot of grief in that as well.
Yeah.
Now, taking it back to that piece when I said earlier, you were saying you agree and disagree. What would you say a person's responsibility is in terms of a relationship of the need part?
Right. So I really make this huge distinction between adult needs, child needs. Mm. That is, to me, something that's fundamental because, you know, when we talk about adult needs, we're talking about there's adult needs are mild. You know, I need this, and I'm going to get into them specifically. I actually have a list that I can read off of because that's really important. But adult needs are mild. You know, I kind of need this. Mm-hmm. I can't get it. Okay. Mm-hmm. Child needs are urgent. Mm-hmm. It's about survival. I really need this. And if I don't get this, I'm either going to throw a tantrum. I'm going to get mad at you. I'm going to, you know, I'm going to really feel it. The emotional reaction is going to be strong. Mm. And in, I think inherently in the child need is the demand that the other person fulfill it. Mm-hmm. So,
so that's the question I'm asking. Is it the responsibility of our partner to meet the child needs?
Well, it is in a codependent relationship.
Okay, yes. which is what we're trying to steer people away.
That's the contract. Gotcha. But obviously, that's a recipe for disaster and tons of pain.
That's beautiful.
So obviously not, but it doesn't mean that we don't do it, and it always ends in pain.
So let's define that for our listeners. So the codependent relationship is, go ahead.
The codependent relationship is that where there's that unspoken agreement where you'll take care of me and in exchange, I'll take care of you. I'll see your needs before you, yourself, and I'll caretake them, you know, imminently. And, you know, that's the agreement. We got it. There's symbiosis, obviously. You know, there's a lack of boundaries between the two. Mm-hmm. But there's also this wonderful, deep sense of unity of it's so luscious. It's so good. It feels so good. I mean, exactly like drugs that it just feels right. Obviously, it's exactly what the child was longing to experience with his mother or her mother. And it was, you know, what needed to be experienced, because symbiosis as an infant is a healthy thing. But, you know, we didn't get that back then. So we're still looking for that today.
That is and so great. That's a great definition.
What we find, and that's what we create. And it feels amazing in the beginning.
For a minute. Then,
for a minute, right? Yes. And then slowly, you know, turns into a shit show.
Yeah. And then the shit show is very addictive too, because that then is replaying all the ways that we didn't get met as a child.
Right.
And then that becomes a toxic pseudo food for us. Right. So the anger and, you know, the child crying when the mother not picking the child up or the father not holding space for the child. So that also is a very common thing in these codependent relationships. And then again, we remind everyone, this is the cultural norm. This stuff is being spat out even now, right? Like this is, it is now part of what I see with the newer generation. Some of that is dying off, and that's a wonderful thing. But then it's going the other way, which is this narcissistic thing, which is like people are so hyper-individuated that there's also not enough of the communion, because there needs to be a level of communion. So that's just something to pay attention to. So would you agree that is the job of the individual to meet those infantile or childhood needs? Not that we can't share with our partner, but we have to actually internally gaze. You know, my experience with myself or with like thousands of people is we don't know what our needs are. So these words are always thrown around. Get your needs met. Get your needs met.
Yeah.
So I love your distinction between the infantile and the adult. The adult stuff can actually be talked about with a little bit of coaching and therapy. The childhood stuff or the infantile stuff, it's so frightening and it's so guttural. Because again, we can sit here as two adults in a room, me and you, you know, me as grandpa and you as young buck, and have this energy and talk about it. But you know, the child, I mean, especially when those of us like me and you had these traumatic experiences, there is such a terror in there. And you know, being vulnerable is scary business. Like one of the biggest things with relationship, the work of it is being vulnerable. And that's another word that people throw around and bandy about, but being vulnerable is frightening. You know, everything in our culture is based so we're not vulnerable.
Right.
We want to look a certain way and make the money and be famous or be the, it's all like, I'll do anything not to be vulnerable.
Yeah.
People see the surface, but I don't feel people necessarily, or some people appreciate how scary it is to be vulnerable. Because again, we're talking about the infant. The infant was going to die if he didn't get his or her needs met. It's not this logistic thing. We're talking logical. This is way after the fact. This is way after the fact. So what would be a way to get in touch with what that need met at a very young age was? Before we get to the adult stuff, let's just break that down.
Well, my experience of child and childhood needs is very basic. Basic in terms of, well, first of all, addressing your question, is it the, you know, is it our own responsibility to address those needs? I mean, yes, because it doesn't work any other way. It just doesn't work. I mean, you can keep asking someone else to fulfill those needs and it just won't work. I mean, it will work for a second. And so you get addicted to that second of fulfillment and you keep asking for more, keep asking for more. And many relationships work like that for an entire lifetime. But ultimately, those needs are, I always use the analogy of the well, you know, it's the well that does not have a bottom. So you can, you know, you can put water in, buckets of water in, but the water will just go through, It doesn't, you know, the level never rises. So to me, that specific work is about recognizing those needs. So what are those needs? Those needs are, to me, the childhood needs are primal. It's feeling worthy of love. It's feeling important. It's feeling beautiful. It's feeling intelligent. It's feeling smart. It's feeling that you deserve love. It's feeling that you deserve respect. It's feeling that you deserve support. And I'm reading off my list, deserve consideration, deserve belonging, deserve being accepted, deserve trust, loyalty, and so on and so forth. So to me, the whole common denominator is the element of worth. I am worth this or that. I'm worth being loved.
So that would be a really important thing to share with our partner in a relationship, but also take responsibility for it, right? Like the thing that I found with this stuff, it's really lovely to sit with someone and be like, hey, these are the things.
Right.
Especially if you're a little bit older. You know, these are the things that come up in a relationship for me. Let's keep an eye on it. And it's my thing. And, you know, for me, I'm always like, call me out on this stuff. I've been in these long-term relationships. This is, if two or three people have said this to me, there's something going on. It's not just on them.
Right.
So, there's that part. And again, this would be a part for people who are not as wounded, maybe not those of us who have more wounding, to do some psychological work around it, just to even have the awareness around it, right? Because this is really an internal experience. Now, it's not like we go to our room and do this. This can be shared. This can be shared.
Right.
You know, I don't feel worthy. What I do is I don't know how to ask for anything. So I will do everything around the house and then I'll punish you without being aware a year down the road.
Right.
like to have this, or I like to, something that I've realized in relationships with my patients, you know, some people really want to have reflected back to them. I really appreciate you for this. So I say to them, are you one of those people?
Right.
Some people don't care. Some people, they're healthy enough where they just do whatever and they enjoy it. It's out of pleasure, right? To do something or to do the cooking or to do the cleaning. For some people, they can do that for their child or dog. They can't do that for their partner. So again, an honest inventory, right? An honest entry of like, just on that level, hey, these are my woundings. And what are your woundings? Can we just discuss that without me taking it on?
Right. And that's the tricky part. Because it's really easy to say, oh, I'm just sharing, but it's like hintity hint hint.
Yes. So also, I guess the people that are listening to this would have a certain level of maturity that would come listen to this.
Right.
Because
like
us, they've been pummeled. And maturity, I don't mean it as, oh, better than that. It's like, no, you've been humbled. And humbled as in pummeled. Mm. Like this is the stuff that's not sexy, but there's a lot of juice in here. This is really juicy business. Right? And again, we can spend days talking about the different levels of childhood wounding.
Yeah.
People can read about it. There's so much good literature on it. But just be aware. What are the patterns? Where are the places where you weren't met as a child?
Right.
Where are the places you had to tap dance? And then this is me and you, because we're more from the codependent version of it, or the caretaker of it. And again, the distinction between caretaking and caregiving. Caretaking is actually a taking, even though it looks good.
Yeah.
But there's also a flip side of this, which is my own experience. You know, I've been involved with narcissists a lot in the past because a wounded person needs the narcissist, because that was our childhood model. If you're raised by a narcissist, you really get attracted to a narcissist.
Yeah.
And that is such an unhealthy, as you said beautifully, so juicy in the beginning, but it's so unhealthy because the narcissist has to learn to soften, to not be the most important. But this is what the Buddhists call idiot compassion. And Ian or an Abdi, if they're involved with a narcissist, they can really be of disservice by doing these things, because that's their high. Look what a boy, good boy I can be. Look at all the things I can do for, I have no needs.
Yeah.
And they get passive aggressive or distant or withholding. Yeah. Right. Yeah. And a narcissist really actually is starving. It looks culturally like it's a good thing. They are in as much pain as a codependent person, or as the, you know, because that's the unhealthy version. So I would also say, those of us who are listening, if they're not coming from this place, or if they're more of a narcissist, which is very hard to see, you're a narcissist, if you're a narcissist. But if your partners or friends have said that to you 2-3 times, maybe something to investigate.
Yeah.
Because narcissism is the different way of dealing with the childhood version of not getting your needs met. Right? It's again, you're living in that ivory tower. Man, it's lonely. You're starving. Yeah. It's lonely. It's just always, it's like, I'm the best. I'm the greatest. I'm perfect. There's nothing wrong.
Yeah,
the world is either all great or all bad. So, again, do we agree then? It seems like we agree that first and foremost, we have to really investigate what is this child stuff and start teasing that out from what the adult relationship is.
Yeah. And it really stuck with me what you said before. Most of us don't know what their needs are. And I was like, oh, fuck. Right. So even if I ask myself, it's not, I don't have a clear list.
Yes.
So I would say, you know, to whatever is feeling as perplexed as I am, it's, I would say, notice what upsets you.
Good one. Good
Just
one.
Simply start there. Good start one. Noticing what upsets you.
Bravo. Bravo. This is beautiful, you just said. So that's actually my own personal marker. As someone who's got third-degree burns emotionally, I can tell when I'm agitated, when I'm in that, I'm like, something's up. I might not know it right away. So we're also human. We have to make room for that. But we have to be very conscious at this juncture when the upset comes up, not to punish our partner. Now, that's very high level because it's very easy to snap and be crazy. But that's actually very important. So this is where the adult piece comes up. One of the things that, especially for those of us who are not just older in age, certainly, but also older souls, is we need downtime and we need alone time. And very few people are capable of actually asking for it or holding it. Obviously, if you are with someone, you're raising a pet, you're raising kids, or you have a business, and then you have, you know, 3 hours a night together because you both work these dog hours. It's actually really important to carve that up. And it can be half an hour, an hour. Not to go like run from working, run from Zooming, and then drop right into relationship. Take a little bit of breathing space. Now, we live in a very fast-paced world with very complicated lives. But one of the things that's really helpful to figure out both what is the infantile child need and what are the adult needs is a little bit of alone time. Not alone time when you're just, you know, taking a shower, or not just alone time, but actually carve that out as the best of your possibilities. Even if it's sitting on a bench outside for 10 minutes before you walk home. Just like, what am I feeling? Because the other thing is that we really inflict a lot of damage on each other as partners with all the unresolved stuff with the day. You got your narcissistic boss that's tearing you an asshole all day, or you got the crazy friend that calls you 10 times a day with the same story, which you haven't learned to be like, basta. Like, no, we don't talk about this boyfriend again for the 300th time. So there is also just a need for just, we said it last time, that loud whisper. That loud whisper, as you said, the heart, it talks loudly. And then part of our addictive mode, addiction is always binary. Yes, no, there's no gray area. So part of the addictive is like, I live with the beloved. She is the best. Like, she's a monster. It's like, okay, those are, that's again the child. Where is the gray area? Where is the room for this human being? Like, who are they? We are such strangers to ourselves and hence with our partners. Where we can really be living with a stranger and it's just like a shared habit. It's the meal, the dog, the cat, the kid, the job, the home, the rent, the mortgage, whatever it is. But we become strangers. And man, that's some painful business. And then we go inside and the secret addictions come in, you know, whatever they are. The drinking, the overeating, the not eating, the anorexia of mind and body, the, you know, being on a computer 10 hours a day. And it doesn't have to be like porn, you know, card games, whatever. It's like we are in so much pain on an unconscious level. And man, there's no compassion towards self. And then from that, no compassion towards the other. And sometimes we're very off and we have to go apologize. And sometimes our partners are very off and they need to apologize. And they might not. And then we got to take it back to ourselves and resolve it. So you said a beautiful thing in the beginning, the Disney thing, the Hollywood thing. People really don't appreciate, you know, most people listening to this have some kind of spiritual bent or spiritual path. Man, relationship is the most difficult thing to do consciously. And really, it's about you with you. It's not even like, oh, my, you know, partner meditates an hour. Nothing to do with that. It's how do I take care of myself in this relationship? And once you're aligned, it really helps the other person. And if it doesn't, then God bless you. You know, we go into the internal piece. We always want to skip this part of internal inventory and what's going on. What would you add to what I just said?
I think that a key element to all this is the fact that many of us have a lot of shame around our needs. So, you know, not only it's not easy to know what our needs are, it's not easy to know when we're actually upset because we're not listening to us. And if we were listening and acknowledged that there was one or more needs that have that are not being met, many times we have shame around those. So if it's something that we can ask for, you know, that we can legitimately ask for, we don't, because, you know, I mentioned this before, not in our talks, but in one of my podcasts. There's this advertisement back in Italy in the 80s about this aftershave, and there was just, you know, this cut of only a man, you know, a fit man with this woman behind him, putting her hands in front, behind, and he was holding this aftershave, saying, "For the man that needs never to ask, you know, that wow. never has to ask. The man that never has to ask." So asking, man, you're a pussy if you ask. If you're a real man, you never ask. You don't need to. It's given to you automatically because you're such a man.
Amazing.
So that really impacts us. That really impacts our psyche, because vulnerability, fragility, need equals weakness. So, and I know by experience that this is true for women as well. I mean, it's just not men, but men mostly, because the man has to be, you know, by stereotype, the strong one and whatnot. But, you know, many of us have had families where asking was not, you know, welcome, basically.
I love it. Like Italians and Spanish are like the Middle Easterners of Europe with the macho culture. It's amazing. So to your point, absolutely shame. And I would, so another bullseye by you. This is very important what you're saying. And I would say deeper than shame, there's an absolute terror that being vulnerable equals to death. Because again, taking it back to the infant, it is death.
Right.
And then the shame comes. And a shame is such an interesting thing because, you know, fear, emotion, you know, rage, emotion. Shame is this human-made glue. I look at it as wood glue. It's not, it's a thing that we feel, but it's actually very human-made as a way of protection. It's not this guttural thing, so it gets very confusing. Mm. Its function is to steer away the experience. So culturally, it's been designed, right? Like, you do not hurt people. It's shameful. So it had functions. But when it comes to these kinds of things, it gets hijacked by the ego to be like, hey, don't go here. Ian, Abdi, don't go here.
Right.
You cannot have this.
Right.
And again, I really take it back to this part where we don't know what our needs are. As you said beautifully, shame, terror, I would add to that.
Mm-hmm.
And then it gets even more nuanced here. The interesting thing is we tend to project our needs on our partner then. So one of the things that also get trickier is like, well, I have no needs, so... You know, macho man, you know, Luigi there with the aftershave, you know, no need here, but like he's going to project it, you know, on his partner and, or her, you know, and this is a part that also gets very confusing. Many times when we have a difficulty, it's certainly been my own poison growing up, you know, as a guy who was such a good codependent, you know, and, you know, this is interesting too. When you have wounding, a lot of times you become intuitive as a way of, you have to survive so much, like soldiers that I treat, you know, they're so intuitive. You're like, oh, you have eyes in the back of your head. That's a compliment. That's not a compliment. You have eyes in the back of your head because you're so goddamn unsafe that you read people, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then again, an addendum to this is when you're that intuitive from your wounding, you know what people need before they do. So your partner might come home and not even know what they need. And then you go in there and interject it. But again, what are you doing? This is the beggar. You know, instead of being royalty, which we all are, we become a beggar. Let me cook this meal. Let me rub their feet. Let me rub their shoulder. And then I'll get love. But then we don't even know what our needs are. So we can't even accept the love that comes back. So we get into this loop. I'm useful because that's our childhood thing. If you have a wounding, but I'm useful, that's about the closest I can get to love. At least that way I won't die, which is really a child's experience.
Right.
If I'm needed, I won't die. I'll get something. So it's really helpful sometimes, even when that comes up, to fight against the part that wants to get up and do something and sit with the discomfort of being helpless. Because connected to the shame that you're beautifully described, there's a helplessness. We don't do helplessness well.
Yeah.
No one does helplessness well.
Right.
Right. You have to get pummeled with your anxiety and then be at the foot of that stove in the countryside at your father's. I had to have a nervous breakdown. Even then we were fighting it.
Right.
I mean, I worked through my nervous breakdown in my 40s. Like, I worked through it. It was unbelievable. Like, people were like, dude, like, do you have AIDS? Like, well, you've lost 20 pounds, you know? Like, what's going on with you? No, I'm good. I'm good. No one can underestimate the terror that pretty much is right under the surface for most of us. Mm-hmm. Whether you're a hyper narcissist, whether you're a hyper codependent, you're sweet, you're not sweet, we have to be faced. So that part, I would say also in relationship, have that relationship. Mm-hmm. You don't need to hunt it down. Yeah. It's there. Yeah. It's there. Would you agree with that?
I do. I do, definitely. And something that I really realized, especially during COVID, is how much the fear and terror translate to anger. The problem is that fear means weakness in our society. Anger means strength. So we embrace that anger and we have our crusades against, you know, basically everybody, but we're not realizing that they're totally terror fueled. Because both shame and terror create so much anger in the child within us. But since we pretend we're adults, we take that anger and just shove it in people's face. And we see so many movements today that, you know, without saying, you know, we've been really hurt by this, say, fuck you, you have to acknowledge me, you have to see me, you have to call me like this. And it's really, and that's another element that I would suggest, noticing how many times, you know, like before, you know, notice when you're upset, how angry are you?
I love what you're saying.
Are you angry? Why do you think you're angry? And why are you really angry?
This is so important what you're saying. So this is the thing I was saying also before. The anger thing, it's such a pointer. So people go like, I don't know, I'm afraid. I'm not afraid. So what I always said to them was like, well, where's the anger? When you get angry, where is it? Right? There's like, there's a part of anger that comes up that's actually self-protective.
But then, which is the healthy one.
Which is the healthy one. But the majority of it is exactly what you're describing.
Right.
And then we shove it down. And then, you know, that's also high because remember, the child, I mean, I know you know, people need to remember the child, the infant was helpless. So anger is one of the ways that we become potent. It's a pseudo potency, it's not real potency, but anger is like puffing yourself up. Like animals get threatened, they puff themselves up. But that can become a habitual thing where you're constantly in that mode. And then, you know, it really does burn that groove in your brain where that's a default setting. We bypass, like, what am I feeling?
Yeah.
And then again, so, in relationship, we have to first be in relationship with ourselves. And that's one of the hardest things because no one really teaches that. And very few of us have a relationship with self.
Right.
So I would say that piece of it again. And then people always say to me, like, well, you know, what do you know? You don't have kids. It's like, no, I appreciate it. You know, you're not dealing with a sick animal. I appreciate that too. But end of the day, the responsibility starts and ends with ourselves of some kind of relationship.
Right.
Right. And have, you know, patients who get up at 5:30 in the morning and do an hour of yoga or go to the martial arts. Like, there's some relationship they have that's just their thing for themselves.
Right.
It's not like, I'm doing this to do this. I'm not doing this. It's just like, this is my thing.
Yeah.
So I would say, like, that'd be also really awesome. You know, for you, your music, whatever. Like, there's a thing that's just yours. For me, my motorcycles. It doesn't have to be an external thing or a consumption thing. It's some invitation. You know, sit down and make a collage. Sit down and, you know, look at art. You know, some people are music aficionados. What is it? And is that experience something that you're checking out or you're checking in?
Right.
Because that's also like a lot of times we go, this is my experience. It's like, well, that's a checking out.
Right. Right. And it's so nuanced.
It's so nuanced. Yeah. It's so nuanced.
Yeah.
The blaming thing is a big thing. I love what you said about the anger. It certainly was my experience so much of my life is I would be angry. And even with therapy and, you know, having done all the spiritual work, I still couldn't find what the child needed because there was such a terror at such a young age where there was no understanding. And I see it. People who haven't had that level of terror do have an easier time, right? But the relationship thing is up for everyone.
Yeah.
And then being that the energy is so intense right now, so much going on, there's a lot of that. And for some people, it's not important. Some people are just a roommate and they do fine and they want to raise their dog or their cat or their kid or have that apartment. And that's fine. Yeah. Right? I mean, for them, it's fine.
Yeah. But
for those of us who bang our head. And then another piece I wanted to add to this, and I'd love to actually hear your take on it. We also tend to lay so much on our partners to meet our needs or have some understanding. Like, what is it? Like, that's also part of that Hollywood, you know, this big romance, and it's great in your 20s, have it, or, but by the time you're 30s, 40s, like, what are we really expecting? What does the mature relationship look like? And they're all different, mm-hmm. right? And what is that sort of infantile, juvenile idea of Cinderella, whatever we have, gay, straight, or trans, of like this, these ideas of this is what love is. I feel the younger generation aren't as poisoned as the older one. They seem to have, they have their own issues around it, but they seem to have a little bit of a less romanticized. But what I see with that too, there's a level of disconnection, which is not necessarily healthy either. It's not this overt codependent stuff. Mm-hmm. There's a level where with all the social media and all that, there's a level of narcissism has crept in. So there's also a level of really not knowing how to connect. But I wouldn't say that the way that our generation connected was necessarily healthy either.
Of course. Of course. So, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't... I think it's very... I mean, so many people I've worked with throughout these years, I've started with regular, you know, therapy counseling and ended up working on how to find your next partner. Because it's really a segue. I think there is a very... There's a lot, obviously, and thanks to Hollywood, thanks to Disney, there's a lot of expectation in how we should feel when we meet, quote unquote, the right person. You know, the right person will feel right. The right person will feel familiar. It's everything will come easy. Everything will be like that. I think there is a very, I really work with people on needs before they look for the right person, quote unquote, because the moment, and I literally have them write down, you know, the moment we start working on that, it's like write an endless list of everything you want from your partner, you know, just write it down. Then the following session, we analyze the list and it's like, okay, which ones are adult, which one are child needs? So which ones can you expect from a partner, which ones are absolutely a recipe for disaster. And then when we find those, it's okay, now make an order of priority. You know, do you want to feel, you know, once we cleared what are the adult needs, so do you need to, do you need there to be affection first? You know, do you need to feel safe with this person? Do you need communication? Beautiful. Do you need sexuality? Do you need a sense of belonging? Do you need dialogue, communication, intimacy, or, you know, all proximity, that. Something that is really touchy in a way? No, not touchy in that way, but, you know, who loves touch, who loves hugs, who loves contact. And the moment you realize what you need most in a relationship, then you know that those are the most important things. And you realize that that sense of, oh my God, this is amazing. This is so, it's not there anymore. And it's unromantic from a certain point of view, because we are used to seeing romanticism as that thing where you're just carried away and you just...
That's the addiction part.
That's the addiction part. That's exactly. Addiction part. That's the child part that still wants. And like you said before, you know, the reason why it doesn't work, it's because I need to find someone that's exactly like my mother or my father to re-experience the thing. But it also translates to the fact that it's going to have the same, you know, issues, and it's going to hurt the same. So it's really about recognizing what I'm looking for, why I'm looking for that. And I think there needs to be an element of grieving. The child's need, the child's dream, I'm sorry. We need to grieve for the child's dream that needs to be, you know, popped.
So this is really big stuff here. So I love what you're saying about the grieving part. That's really, really powerful. So how can we point people to that? Because we both have had that experience. So is there a daily practice or a weekly practice one can do when one gets to that place to just make room for that grief? make room for all the places we weren't met, to soften towards that.
Yeah. I mean, I was thinking about it today, this exact point, and like any good addict, I so many times miss that. You know, you never lose, I think, as an addict, that longing for your fix, you know. But the moment you start doing enough work on yourself and the adult prevails over these impulses, you start saying, it's okay. It's okay. And I always see it as that loving father, in my case, loving child relationship. It's like saying to yourself or to your inner child, it's like, I know, baby. I know you really want that. And I'm here with you. I'm really here with you. And I grieve with you. I'm so sorry you didn't get that. And I'm so sorry you can't get it anymore. There's no way you can get what you never had. But I'm here.
I love what you're saying. The tolerating those feelings.
Yeah,
I remember my experience in my 20s, you know, when I was having these spiritual awakenings, and I could really start seeing the difference between the spiritual, quote unquote, and the psychological. Mm-hmm. And in the spiritual, I could go into this expanded states and, you know, life and past lives and all, whatever. These are like visions and angels, and it was amazing. And then I would come into the personality, and man, I was suicidal and had stopped doing drugs. So I wasn't numbing. Mm-hmm. And it literally felt the pressure of the ocean. I would always get this image of being in this little bubble under the ocean. That was a level of grief. And everything on top was pain and grief. Yeah. I remember like whatever, 23, 24, being like, how am I ever going to get out of under this thing? And it was so confusing to have this spiritual, profound oneness experiences. And then have this thing of, I was like, I will never work through this pain in this lifetime. So much pain. There's so much on my shoulders. And that can be very overwhelming.
Yeah.
And again, to your point, the way that works through, and it's still, it's a process, it doesn't end, is literally to make room and sit with it and not get lost in it, not negative pleasure it.
Right.
As you said beautifully, just that thing, and really also grieving. I mean, there's times where you just sob. You sob for the boy. You sob for the little girl. You sob for all the cruelty. As it doesn't matter what your understanding is. And this is a point that I've realized in my own case, and I always make. Many times we go towards a spiritual path, partly, if not mostly, because this pain is so overwhelming, we want relief from it.
Yeah, yeah.
And that doesn't affect this.
Yeah.
You know, you taking your Fiat Panda to your mechanic to fix is not going to fix the plumbing in the house, even though they both have water issues because the Fiat has radiator leak, and then you have a radiator leak inside your home. And that also can be the confusion with this. And some of this stuff, yes, expert help, work with a therapist. Yeah. And part of it is, you know, I don't have money. I don't have this. I don't have time. Man, 5 minutes a day. Is this because your partner acted like this? Or is this actually triggering the same wounding of how you weren't met?
Right.
You can have the conversation with the partner. End of the day, the partner can change that behavior. You're going to still feel like this.
Yeah.
Right? And you can heal this and your partner's doing that, then it really needs to be addressed with the partner.
Right, right.
And I don't want to go off topic here, but this, I feel, it connects to what we're talking about. One of the things is when we're doing a level of work that we're doing, that we're discussing here, the partner that we met 5 years ago, 3 years ago, 2 years ago, 10 years ago, we have to renegotiate. Because if the agreement was, Abdi has no needs. He's going to tap dance. He's going to do all this stuff. And then he's going to be this, you know, angry guy or withholding guy or whatever. Now he's learning, like, well, I actually have needs. We have to renegotiate that. And we can't just expect our partner to read our minds in that. It's actually not fair. And it's really not their fault. It's really our responsibility. Now, having said that, also the partner not necessarily is going to want to have the new Ian. It's not the real Ian. It's going to be like, wait a minute. The agreement was you have no needs, Ian. You meet my needs. How dare you have a nervous breakdown? How dare you? Right? So again, the nuances of this, there's no cookie cutter energy here. And again, all of this might sound heavy, like our last session did. This is all invitation to more peace and joy. All we're talking about here, we're not doing this just, oh, go into the pain, go into the pain. It's like, you're in pain. Yeah. You don't know you're in pain. You're in pain. You're numbing. You really don't think you're in pain? Don't check out for a second, see how much pain you're in. Now, it's about being in joy. What you said beautifully last time, like, I loved your softness last time. You know, go watch your two Netflix. Go enjoy an ice cream. Go watch, you know, NBA as an Italian who should be watching Milano, like you traitor to your people. you know, do these joyous things. Like, that can only come from you having the pain you had to go through that you can be that soft.
Yeah.
Because you've always been a soft guy. I love that about you. But the guy that I met a decade and a half ago is not the guy I'm talking to now. There's a softness in you, man, which is, again, that's real strength. That's real vulnerability. Vulnerability, strength. This culture really doesn't get that. Our culture, world culture. Yeah. It's not just the Italian advertisement with the cologne have none. I mean, that's all across here too, right? Or you'll be happier when your sheets are wider, or you'll be happy. You know, that's all from like external. And to kind of put this all in one blanket, culture is not our friend in that culture needs you to be externally referenced because that's how it sells you things.
Right.
You know, like, and it's not, again, you can enjoy your NBA, motorcycle, ice cream from a place of being in your energy as opposed to like, oh my God, I'm in so much pain. I need to check out right now.
Yeah.
I would say even then when you do it, pay attention. I know this for myself. Am I sitting here in front of the screen or with a tool in my hand because there's some pain in me? Or is it because it's actually a joyous thing? Or is it because this thing needs to be fixed? This is my motor transportation. Like, it doesn't have to be just these two things. It can be 10.
Yeah.
10 things, but like to check that, to check that, to be able to have a little bit of downtime.
Yeah.
But even the meditation, not like I'm sitting to meditate. You just sit, it's just a meeting. You know, how's this stranger you call yourself? I always go to that poem, like, who is this stranger you call yourself? How is he feeling today?
Yeah.
Where is he at today?
Yeah. And we have such a, distorted, understandably distorted view of what pain is. Because our child found that pain almost unbearable. It was life-threatening pain.
It's so important. So important what you're
saying. And so much of the fear we have today of our own pain is the fact that we still consider that level of pain to be life-threatening. That's why we don't even want to go near it.
Yes. It's so important.
So simply considering the possibility that that pain is much more bearable than we think.
Yes.
We don't know exactly what it is to feel that pain in a fearless way, you know, not be afraid of that pain. We realize that it's just pain.
Yes.
It's no big deal. It is painful, but it doesn't mean that it has to be overwhelming and it's not that hard pain that the child experienced. It can be a soft pain full of, you know, love, compassionate love for ourselves and saying, yes, I experienced that. That hurt a lot. And it's exactly like feeling that pain alone or with a loved one who's hugging us. It's the same exact pain, but it feels it's so much more bearable in those moments. So that's really important because a lot of our struggle is with our psychological belief of what that pain is going to do to us. And that tiny shift of saying, what if as an adult, I can handle that pain in such a different way as the child?
It's so great what you're saying. This is a tolerating piece. And this is so important, this distinction, because it literally was death. This is the, I always try to make this point. You know, as a guy who used to do hypnosis work for serious trauma back in the day, and he would take people back. We always think about it from the adult mind. It's like impossible really to appreciate exactly what you're saying. That was death. It's not terror. Go ahead.
Yes. And in the early days, you used the word, it's enough just to tolerate it.
Yes.
And that's what I was struggling with. Yes. That's why it was so helpful, because I kept thinking I have to be over it.
Yes.
You know, I will be okay when it's over.
Yes.
And you kept reminding me, just tolerate it. Yes. Just show up and tolerate it. And that kept coming back, and that was so fucking helpful because I realized I do not have to fix this. I do not have to be over this. Right. I just need to show up and tolerate it.
It's such an important point. You know, I came across this myself in my own work as being in therapy, and then I start saying it later on with my patients, where actually therapists, you know, as healers or therapists, we're trying to actually heal ourselves. So that's why we get into therapy, till we get cooked enough so we can be helpful. It was amazing how fast even professionals, meaning therapists, would try to rush people through this process because of their own unresolved anxiety around it. Mm-hmm. And what I learned was, like, you know, saying just, but to sit with this thing, that's what it does. When we get something that comes from the unconscious, we don't need to do anything but just show up. It advises us. Because of our being over-mobilized, we always think we got to do something or fix it or do something. All the unconscious is asking is, like, hey, we haven't been able to look at this. Can I show it to you? Can you look at it? You don't need to do anything. You need to throw it out. You don't need to fix it, paint it. Just, can you just look at it? Right? That's the invitation.
Right.
And the amazing thing is we can even use very distinct techniques that were designed to do this, like mindfulness, like awareness, and not do it, to bypass it, right? That's spiritual bypass. Right. So the sitting with it seems so counterintuitive, but man, that's what does the healing. Now, for most of us, we get pummeled into it, but also you can have a nervous breakdown and not do it. You can, you know,
right?
Because it's, again, we have to really put this point on that there is such a level of terror. The terror is terror of death. It's not because I'm scared of something. It's I'm going to die.
Right.
And yes, it's brave work, but when it comes knocking on your door, you don't really have an option because it'll keep knocking louder and louder and louder.
Yeah. And unless we're dealing with huge trauma that, you know, requires EMDR or, you know, deep psychoanalysis, it's really just child parts that ask to be seen.
That's it.
Period.
That's it. And to put that right in there, I love you made that point. You know, for people who have very serious trauma, to do this, you can have a psychotic break. So we're saying, like,
exactly.
Yes. Also, like, you know, pay attention, like, where your level of trauma is.
Right.
But for the person who doesn't have that level of trauma, which is a lot of people, just when a piece of information comes, it will bring with it what it needs. Just sit with that. Open the door. Right. And it's like that Rumi poem, you know, guests come and you let them come and go through. Some of them sit a little bit longer. Some of them go right through. You don't have to attach to them. You don't have to feed them, clothe them. Just take an awareness of, like, a mental note. Oh, and even
be
in the
guest
morning.
House.
Yeah. A guest house. Beautiful. You know, I'm this today. I feel at peace today. I'm anxious today. Is it a dream? Was it something with my partner? What am I feeling?
Yeah.
Right. What is this thing underneath it? And then, like we talked about, just to bring this to close, it's the head, it's the instinct, which is really not what we're talking about. They're very much connected. It's survival. We're talking about going from survival to living. That's the heart in the Sufi language.
Right.
What is the heart saying? That's the whisper of the heart.
Right.
So to bring our discussion again to a close, I would say this is like we talked about last time again, to go from survival to living. We can survive at a very high level. It can look very similar outside, but internally we know we're in survival mode and we're living. Living is an art form. What the Sufis call a real human being. It's not some hoity-toity walking on air. It's actually someone who's here. And in order to be here, you have to take these little pieces that unconsciously you've hidden or worked on hiding, or the culture really promotes hiding, and make them visible. And that's a process, not an event. Otherwise, you will have that psychotic break.
Right. Yeah. And it's beautiful because we started talking about relationships and we ended talking about us. It's really about us. And there's that beautiful book by that, I think she's a Zen monk. She's called Sherry Huber, I think. Mm-hmm. And it's Be the Person You Want to Find.
Oh, yeah, I love that. You know? It's just really that title.
And it's really about becoming that welcoming, compassionate, loving parent to yourself.
Yeah.
And then, you know, that's it. That's it. You find that, you welcome your child, and then you're going to meet someone that is as welcoming with you as a single parent, you know, each with their children, but, you know, each caretaking their own children.
Yeah. And we come here alone and we leave here alone. So that also has to be remembered. Right. Yeah. And that in, not in a negative way, but in a beautiful way. So everything along the way. So even with those of us who've had painful relationships or divorces or whatever, like, man, bless it all. You know, just be grateful for it all because it made you the person you are now. So even these resentments we have, like, work on that. Like, blessings on all of them. Blessings on us. blessings on the unconscious part of us that did fucked up things, blessings on the unconscious parts of them that did fucked up things, man. It's okay to be human. So you're playing last time. It's okay. This is the blessing. Right. The mitzvah. Right. It's like being human, that's the blessing.
Right. Mm. Right. Beautiful.
Beautiful.
Thank you.
Thank you, brother. Always lovely connecting. And I look forward to our next talk.
Absolutely.
So much love for you. Take care, my brother. Ciao, ciao. Yeah,
likewise. Ciao, ciao.